Case number 5, Appeal 09-1083, United States versus Portman. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lauren Robel, and I represent the appellant, Kerry Portman. Mr. Portman's been incarcerated for the past over 2 years in a four-year sentence. It's painfully apparent that he is mentally ill. He presents two arguments today, that his sentence is substantively unreasonable and an abuse of discretion.
Let me start you out by saying that this case really has concerned me greatly. Perhaps the district court erred in focusing exclusively on the risk of recidivism. But did Dr. Borelli's reports and testimony really establish a viable basis for a finding of diminished mental capacity? When he said that he wasn't much interested in the details of Mr. Portman's offenses, for example, it seemed that he really was not aware of the legal criteria for a finding of diminished capacity. And in the interest of being fully open about everything, let me say that I am well aware that Dr. Borelli is an extremely respected and honorable psychiatrist in the city of Chicago.
Your Honor, he is the first, this was the first federal criminal trial in which he had been certified as an expert in psychiatry. He testified that he had, on the basis of 45 hours of interviews with Mr. on the basis of reviewing the indictment with Mr. Portman's attorney, Mr. Halperin, on the basis of reviewing the diminished capacity guideline, that Mr. Portman had diminished capacity and that he had it at the time of the offenses. In fact, the diagnosis that he ultimately made, and I think it is clear if you read Dr. Borelli's testimony, that he his relationship to the legal system and its understanding of insanity is at odds with his heart, I suppose, is the way to put it. But he testified that Mr. Portman had a cognitive disorder, and cognitive disorders used to be about the only ground for use of a diminished capacity departure in the old world of departures. This conclusion, I think, is amply corroborated by almost everything that we know about Mr. Portman. He never concealed his identity when he was involved in this set of schemes. Almost everything he did was with institutions or people who knew full well who he was. He argued with them about their attempts to talk him out of believing that he was owed a $20 million inheritance. He has argued with Panama about his status as a Panamanian ambassador. He's argued with Nigeria about whether or not these documents were fraudulent. He has, as this court well knows, brought a number of preposterous lawsuits claiming hundreds of billions of dollars based on patently phony documents that Mr. Portman appears unable to accept are not actual documents. Like this is a case, and I don't think the sentencing judge in this case disagreed that he was mentally ill. In fact, she said in her order that he needs treatment for mental illness. She concludes that a lengthy sentence is necessary to provide an atmosphere in which he can receive treatment for mental illness. But what happened here is the judge elided the diminished capacity argument, which was really the key issue at sentencing, and decided that instead of addressing that argument, she would take the position that because he couldn't comprehend the wrongfulness of his acts, he was likely to recidivate. And as in United States versus Miranda, if the court had taken that position in United States versus Miranda, or indeed in almost every case involving a serious mental illness, the very fact that a defendant can't comprehend the wrongfulness of his behavior would be a reason under 3553 to sentence him to a longer sentence. And that simply eviscerates the policies behind the diminished capacity guideline and its application notes and the cases of this court. The reliance in the district court and here on United States versus Beyer, I think, is profoundly misplaced. That was not a case that involved a claim of diminished capacity. Indeed, it couldn't, because Beyer was a sexual predator, a child pornographer, and Congress has taken diminished capacity as an argument away from that category of defendants. It did so in 2003, and Beyer was a 2007 case.
Where should Mr. Portman be?
He should be in a mental institution. He should be under treatment for this disease that he has. And it is not serving the interests of the United States, and it is not serving the interests of the victims in this case, frankly, to have Mr. Portman being moved around the Bureau of Prisons from place to place. He's not somebody who is well. I think at the very least, the failure to address the diminished capacity evidence in this case was abuse of discretion. I think I'll rest on the rest of my argument in my brief.
Mr. Chapman, come on up here and explain to us why this man is not mentally ill and belongs.
I will certainly do just that. Your Honor, there was no evidence presented to the district court to show that the defendant's offenses were in any way caused by any mental illness. Defendant argued he had diminished capacity. Dr. Borelli testified that he had diminished capacity, but of course, as Your Honor indicated, if we set forth in our brief, Dr. Borelli in no way tried to establish a causal nexus between whatever mental condition the defendant may have and the offenses he committed. Dr. Borelli did not know, in fact, what the offenses were, and he said that he wasn't really interested in them and that they were a minor portion of his analysis, that he didn't want to get bogged down in those kinds of details. But, of course, a diminished capacity finding necessarily requires that.
Was it offered as a defense to the crime or as a alternate method of taking care of disposing of the case by sending to a mental institution?
I'm sorry, in terms of...
There's a difference between the defense to a crime and what you do with them after you've established the fact that he committed the crime. You're following me so far? So that if you don't know why you're being sentenced, you don't know why you're being punished, then you're beyond that punishment thing. You wind up in a hospital. Was the issue raised in that sense, or was it raised as a defense to the act itself?
It wasn't raised as a defense to the act. It was simply raised as an argument for a lower sentence. There was nothing more.
It was a sentencing problem. It had nothing to do with the defense to the crime.
That's exactly right, Judge. That's exactly correct.
So the criteria for the reduction is different from that. That would be a defense to the crime. The defense to the crime would be that he didn't understand a criminal because of mental disease or mental defect. He couldn't understand the criminality of his act or conform his conduct to that one. But there's a different aspect to the second part of it, isn't there? And that was not raised or was raised?
The issue of
what do we do with him now? That's the issue.
No. That was not raised by
the... We just want to reduce the sentence.
That's correct. That's correct. There was no argument that he should be put into...
A mental institution.
An institution. And in fact, there's nothing... Judge Manning, considering all of this evidence that was presented to her, did not find that Dr. Borelli had outlined a course of treatment. It's directly in her memorandum of opinion and order. He did not outline a course of treatment that would suggest to her that there was an alternative sentence or some form of treatment.
Refresh my recollection. What did the defense ask the judge to do at the time of sentencing? It was Mr. Halpern, I believe?
It was John Meyer, Mr. Meyer. He simply asked for a below-range sentence.
A lower sentence.
That's right.
Shouldn't Judge Manning have resolved the contention that he suffered from diminished mental capacity? Shouldn't she have made a finding as to whether he suffers from diminished capacity before sentencing him?
The answer, Your Honor, is no. She does not need to do that. First of all, under Rule 32, a judge, of course, whenever there's a disputed issue of fact, is not compelled to resolve every disputed issue of fact.
I know, but here you have a fellow who sort of seems like a raving lunatic. I mean, when you look at the things that he did.
Well, if I may address that, Your Honor, first of all, the defendant was not charged in this case with trying to redeem $12 million or $4 billion worth of bonds or certificates of deposit. What he was charged with in this case was passing a series of bad checks in realistic dollar amounts, and he was successful in defrauding some of these people and in also trying to sort of piggyback a Nigerian inheritance scheme to obtain loans from
individuals. Well, really, one friend, I guess, and also $1,000 from one of the banks just to get him out of there.
I don't think they weren't trying to get him out of there. The $1,000 from, I believe it was TCF Bank, the last of the bad checks, was given to him because the manager was trying to keep him if he was, in fact, going to be a good customer of the bank. And so they gave him a little money up front.
Front money.
They gave it to him up front. None of the money's been repaid. And so it's one of these situations, I think, Your Honor, where despite Dr. Borelli's...
Did anybody ever ask for a hearing for commitment, or is that not was that not before the court at all?
It wasn't before the court in any way, Judge. And Dr. Borelli's first analysis, I think, was well back before trial. And so because Dr. Borelli, his first report came back with an inconclusive finding as to whether there was any kind of mental illness and whether it contributed to the offenses, there was never an argument of an insanity defense.
Is that before trial or after trial?
The first analysis, the 45 hours, was before trial. And then after that, he issued the two-page supplemental opinion where he found that the defendant was suffering from diminished capacity. But again, he didn't know exactly what that was.
And it was never pointed out to Dr. Borelli that he needed to actually look at the charges in the context of the examination.
I don't know what he was told, but it was very clear from cross-examination that
he was called by the defendant, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He suggested that he had met with Mr. Halpern initially.
No, yeah, but the government didn't call
mm-hmm.
him.
No, we didn't. Oh, as a witness, no.
The witness was that of the defense.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Instructed by the defense as well, I assume.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing I would add is...
The only reason I asked the question, because it never came up in the context of Judge Manning, you know, asking the psychiatrist to look to focus on that question.
That's right. The court never instructed mm-hmm. him as a defense witness.
Mm-hmm.
And the other advantage that the district court had in this case, and I think it's important to remember, in that in focusing on deterrence... is one of the very most important factors that resulted in the within-range sentence. Judge Manning had the benefit of observing the defendant, not just there at sentencing, but all the way through the proceeding, from the arraignment, all the way through the trial, through the pretrial proceedings, through the extended sentencing hearing, 3 days of testimony and argument, and she heard his allocution. And based upon all of that was in the record, Judge Manning I don't think she found that he was a raving lunatic or that he had a mental issue.
Yeah,
what she thought was that he presented dangerousness, and he was dangerous in that he might recidivate, but she didn't feel she needed to resolve whether he did in fact have this mental
problem. Well, I mean, of course she saw him, you know, in the courtroom, et cetera, but when you take a look at this fellow's history and the bizarre behavior,
I think the problem with that is that there are alternative explanations for that. So, for example,
but there are a hell of a lot of bizarre people floating around the country.
And there may be, Judge, but we look at the defendant's actions, especially his litigation against Citibank. There are reasons for that, that one could draw the inference that the reason he's filing all this litigation against Citibank isn't because he really believes he's a $12 million check that he wants to cash, that it's legitimate, but he wants to harass Citibank. There was a defendant, especially when he was denied this loan, expressed a lot of hostility towards Citibank, was threatening to sue them. So even though he's engaged in some of these other situations, certainly the ones he was engaged in here were realistic in terms of what people may do. He did defraud 3 of the 10 victims. To some extent, he did it methodically, and he did it 10 times over a 9-month period. So the evidence of the offenses in this case wasn't the sort of bizarre individual who's out doing something that all of us would just shake our head at and be confused as to why anyone would do it. These were very sort of methodical attempts to cash these checks.
Well, let me just talk to you about her view of diminished capacity. She suggested that if anything, diminished capacity would favor a longer sentence. And has any circuit upheld the use of diminished capacity as an aggravating factor? I mean, her rationale was a little, to me, is a little different. To say that, you know, I just haven't come across a case where you would increase the sentence based on a finding of diminished capacity.
I don't know of any case that does that specifically, Your Honor, but I will note that this court in the Miranda decision, which the defense relies upon, of course, suggested that on remand, they didn't direct the court by saying, if you find diminished capacity, automatically go to a lower sentence. In Miranda, they said the district court may go either way. The district court may go lower, but the district court may...
That is, if you're insane enough or crazy enough, you can't be cured, so you might as well go to jail forever if it isn't interfering, if the mental condition had nothing to do with the crime or had very little to do with the crime. Just that you lacked social awareness to keep from committing a crime as opposed to criminality awareness.
Look, recidivism, of course, is always a legitimate concern. But to some extent, that's a separate issue from diminished capacity. And moreover, it's a risk that theoretically certainly could be addressed through other means, psychological treatment, monitoring. If indeed he does suffer from diminished capacity, that's a factor that arguably calls for a lesser sentence, a different way of dealing with it. I mean, here you've got a guy who insists that he's the ambassador, insists that he's suing, carries on really a bizarre person, but I guess, I mean, I've never seen him, but I guess he presents as fairly normal-looking.
Dr. Borelli found exactly that. They did a full neurological workup.
Did anybody ever ask the court to do anything except to reduce the sentence?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge. Not that I recall.
Well, she's got a rebuttal time, and I'll repeat the question.
We'd ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Okay, thank you so much.
The only thing the judge did was sentence, and that's the only thing that she was asked to do.
Mr. Portman's mental condition came up at a variety of places in the trial. Two attorneys wanted competency. He had two attorneys, as you can imagine. And the
Which is by itself not a sign of insanity.
No, no, it is not.
I don't know about that.
He was evaluated early on. There were concerns about his competency.
Competency stand trial. That was established ahead of time.
Exactly.
Okay, and now we go to trial. Does anybody ever say to the judge, we want him to go to a hospital, not to jail?
As far as I can tell, apparently no.
Neither could I, but I thought maybe there was something sneaking in there that I hadn't seen.
What I can say is that Dr. Borelli did directly testify that the reduced mental capacity that Mr. Portman was suffering from contributed substantially to the commission of the offense. I
mean, except he never looked at the offense.
No, he actually also testified that he reviewed the charges with Mr. Halperin, Mr. Portman's first attorney, including the indictment, that he spent a couple of hours with Mr. Halperin doing that, and that's, I have an oddly numbered transcript, but I think that is at page 18 of his testimony.
Who is it that found, what went into the finding that he was competent to stand trial to begin with?
I think the competency, my reading of the record is that the competency standard is so minimal that...
you understand the nature of the charges against him, you can cooperate with your counsel and defend against. That's a fairly simple one. It's not complicated, but...
But was there psychiatric evidence?
The early testimony in the case, and I'd have to rely on Mr. Chapman for this, but there was testimony from his neurologist early on.
A neurologist?
Yes, Dr. Goldberg.
Right down your alley.
One thing I'd like to point out, though, is that the diminished capacity standard itself takes into account protecting the public and does so with violent crimes and lengthy criminal histories, neither of which is an issue in this case.
Thank you all. I'll take the case under advisement. And I